All right, folks, welcome to the runningrestaurants.com podcast. We're bringing the tips, tools, and techniques you need to make your restaurant more profitable and successful. I'm your host, Jamie Oichel. Today, I got a great episode for you with Jason Brooks, founder and CEO of Hospivation, author of the new book, Every Leader Needs Followers. So, Jason, I'm really looking forward to talking about the book. I read a lot of books you see here. I love kind of consuming that. Tell me how the book came about from you. Tell me a bit about your backstory, because that'll probably lead right into it. What do you think?
You know, it's a six-year project. It's something that took me some time just because when I sought out to write the book, I didn't want it to be a memoir. I looked at my experience. I've been in the restaurant business for over 30 years now. That tells my age, especially with no hair. But I've been in the business for 30 years now. And I look back at the times that I struggled the most with being a manager within this industry, and I thought back to what are some of the key things that if I knew of, if I had as a systematic approach, would make it easier for me to find out who I was, my style of management. So when I sought out to write the book, I was actually getting feedback from different figures, different people that I've had the pleasure and honor of working with to help find the voice of the book. So it's a six-year project. It's really built towards making sure managers never lead alone again. And it's 10 keys to transform restaurant managers to hospitality leaders.
Yeah, we're going to go through some of those keys in today's talk for sure. Talk about some you mentioned 30 years. Okay, how did you start? Where were some of the brands you've worked with over the years? Tell people a little bit more depth.
You know, we all have very similar origin stories. You know, starting out banging out dishes, age of 15, mom and pop seafood restaurant in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And from there, I went on to prep and then to pantry and then to grill and then to saute. And I've been a sous chef, a bar manager, general manager, a managing partner, franchise business consultant, and franchise operations coach. You know, I've worked for 20 different brands within 30 years.
Right.
And during that 20 different brands, I tell you what, I've seen the Mona Lisa painted 20 different ways. Some of it is some real pieces of art, and some of it has been some real pieces. And that's what really got me to understand what does perfection look like within the eyes of different leaders, of different managers? How is that executed? Because we all have our vision of what business should be and then how it executes when it's in the four walls in front of the customer. And having that vision of seeing that different ways also helped to build out this book. Now, I've worked for brands from local brands to Hilltop House, which is fine dining in downtown Fayetteville, from to the Holiday Inn, to Old Charlie's, to Chi Chi's, to Outback. Many large brands, mom and pop brands, franchise brands, corporate owned. It's definitely given me a different piece. My background has given me a piece of not just being creative, but also being systematic and then finding ways to build that relationship when it comes to a franchisee and a franchisor as well.
Yeah, good. A lot of stuff there. Appreciate it. You threw a couple of names that I remember. Is Chi-Chi still around, by the way?
No, they aren't. No. Oh, man. No, yeah. They went through some challenges. You know, some brands go through challenges, just don't make it. Some brands like Chipotle go through challenges, and then their stock ends up being over $2,000 per share. Yeah. it's just crazy. Yeah. You know, yeah. it's how we react to those challenges, what can bring us through them or be our demise. So, yeah.
Yeah, man. One of the things you hit on that I think is really interesting is if, let's say, you work for one company for 30 years, then you kind of only have that one perspective and you kind of have a narrow way of how things go. But I really like the way that you're bringing in so many different viewpoints. So you've seen what's worked in various places over the years and can bring all those things to bear into one kind of stream of thought. So let's go to the beginning of the book, chapter one, you know, and see where the conversation kind of kicks off. You talk about mastering your KPIs, key performance indicators. How do you think restaurants should manage it? What should they do? What's really most important? What do you think?
You know, mastering your KPIs has to be the key for every manager getting into that role. You know, this book is geared towards the GMs, the DMs, even regionals. Knowing your numbers and knowing what they mean has to be the key foundation, because that's what we are graded on, every business, because it is a business first, it's a restaurant second. So knowing your KPIs and also knowing those acronyms. Whenever we first come on board, I hear so many different acronyms and then we shake our head like, yeah, I know exactly what that means. And then it's like, no, I've never heard that three-letter word in my life. But knowing what your KPIs are, and not just what the normal KPIs are, there's typically three different levels. There's the brand level KPIs that when the brand makes their business plan and they make it for the overarching goal for the year, you have that level. Then you have your multi-unit or your DM level KPIs. That is the KPIs that's set for that region or for that area according to how they did last year or are doing this year. And then there's the store level. Store level, you could be surpassing some of those KPIs or underperforming, and you're finding ways to know what is the brand KPI, what's the area, what is my store, and now how do I break that down into bite-sized chunks? We do a really bad job in our industry of making bite-sized chunks. We do great at making large targets, huge targets. And it's typically three targets or three KPIs: sales, labor, and food. And then we have these huge targets, but still people struggle on hitting large targets. That's because those targets are typically set for too long of a period. Finding ways to find smaller targets that make sense for the team member, make sense for just the bar or just the host or for the cook or for the prep person. And then what that goal, what that target means for their position. When we make bite-sized pieces, 7 days and goals for their position, now we're talking about not just goal setting, but goal getting. That's how we get to really hit targets when we break that big KPI all the way down to the busser, to the prep person, to that saute cook, and what they do within their world to help put the human element to that number.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are guilty of not breaking it down to like you said, to the busser, to the host, to what how your job impacts it. It's easy to say, hey, let's boost sales 10% or let's cut costs 10% and so forth. But what does that mean? How do you break it down and how do you manage that and so forth? And one of the things I really Jason sent me an advanced copy of his book and first of all, I guess in saying that, when does it officially come out?
Monday, March 18th. Okay. It is available for pre-order now on Amazon. The actual Kindle version is ready now to pre-order. The paperback and the hardcover will be available on March 18th.
Okay, good. We got that out of the way. So March 18th, go reserve your copy now. We'll talk more about how to get that towards the end. But so I saw an advanced copy. One of the things I really liked at the back of the section, you have a whole bunch of quotes and so you kind of pulled them from the piece and you didn't necessarily talk about this aspect when you were just talking, but this one stuck out to me. It's a quote from one of your people in there, I guess, Pat Peterson, but he talks about, you know, we praise the top 10% and we shame the bottom 10%. But that 80% in the middle is really where the opportunity is. You want to add some color to that?
Yes. Pat Peterson is spot on. First of all, he is a absolute genius. I've had the pleasure of knowing him, man, for probably the past 12 years now. And he is spot on. There's too much time that we spend the most time with the bottom 10 or that top 10. How you move companies, how you move brands, or just even move your brand is moving that middle 50 or the middle 80. That middle 80 is where it's the most people asking for the most help. And it's finding ways to take the learnings from your top 10%, what they do great, what their habits are, what their culture is, and then getting that top 10% either with you, whether it's your top 10% of servers, your top 10% of cooks, or top 10% of restaurants, and finding the leaders within that segment and then helping to delegate out, to show, to be shoulder to shoulder in a very formulated way of how to create that same culture or similar within those locations. We are known to find the fire, break out the hose, and start spraying water on it. That's what our industry does. We are always looking for the fire. One of the other keys that I have that's in the book is called Closing the Gap. And that's key number seven. And on key number seven, sorry, key number nine. On key number nine, we are like Terminators. Whenever we are walking through any restaurant, our neck is on swivel. We are looking 20 feet wide and 20 feet out because we are looking for that next fire, the next thing that is out of place, a buzzer that isn't set, food that's on the counter that should be in the cooler. And we're always focused on that next fire. And what we have to focus on instead of the fire is how to be fire chiefs. Now, the fire chief does it differently. The fire chief isn't just looking for that bottom 10%, nor looking for the thing that's wrong. The fire chief is actually talking to his fire crew and coaching them how to look for those things, where to be at with that fire. Because if we're the ones that's always holding that hose, we can't see the fire on the backside of the building or on the left or on the right. So that's definitely one of the things that we have to do better whenever we are looking at that middle 80. Don't focus so much on the fire of that 10% or the good stuff of the top 10, because we're missing a huge swath of that 80 that's in the middle.
Yeah, I really, really like the fire chief analogy and talk there. That kind of brings it home for sure, because yeah, restaurant business being in the moment, in the time, the busy part. Yeah, it's like, what's next? Where is the next fire? And it's not proactive, it's reactive. And and of course, you know, we can pull out a quote from somebody. If you're just being reactive, you're not going to be successful. You got to get ahead of it and get around it. So we can spend a lot more time on KPIs. Let's go to your chapter 2.2. Owner-like orientation. This is a big piece, bringing people in and getting started. What are some tips there?
We suck at it.
There you go.
If you think about what usually happens whenever we do orientation, we have a hire and we make them an offer, and half the time the offer sounds very cold, very lukewarm. And then we bring them in for their first day. We may have, you know, some aprons, shirt, hat, paperwork. And then we bring them over to the table. We sit them down. We say, hey, let's, you know, fill out this stuff here. And then let's head to the back. And as we head to the back, you then break out the laptop, put them on the laptop, get them some training. And then you put them on their one position. Now, that's how we usually do orientation. But that is so wrong. We are teaching them to only be focused on three things. First thing is their new break table. Have you noticed that the table that you typically do orientation at happens to be their new break table? Second thing is then a laptop for their training. And then the third thing is one position. So the only thing that they're focused on for the next 6 weeks are those three areas. As soon as you say, hey, can you help do this or can you help do that? Oh, that's not my job. That's Billy's job or that's Sarah's job. But what we should do, still set up that table. But instead of bring them right on in, say, okay, thanks for coming to orientation. Let's head outside. You head outside and you take them all the way to the front curb of the building.
Yep.
And you say, this is my restaurant. This is where the customers see it at. Every customer that chooses to eat here or not still sees this view as they pull in. Let's walk the lot. And then you walk them around the whole building. You talk them through. We sweep this parking lot every single day. We clean the windows. We do sidewalks. This is all of the trash. Whenever we are out here, we bring someone out 3-4 times per day to make sure that there is no trash. Here's the dumpster bins. At the dumpster bin, we keep this closed. If we drop trash, we get this swept up as soon as that happens to make sure that we don't have flies. And then we keep those doors closed. This is the backside, but you're walking them all the way through. And then as you walk in, you're talking to them about what they see as they walk into the restaurant, what they hear. And as you're talking them through, you're giving them a 1, 3, and a 5 view of what they're seeing or hearing. 1 being a low point, 3 meaning par, and 5 meaning above par. As you're doing this, you are teaching them some of the almost exact same customer feedback scores most restaurants have. So then Billy says, that's a 1. I need to be at a 5, or that's a 3. I should be at a 5. So you're walking them through as the customer walks in, whenever they get greeted, as they walk up to order, as they sit down, when they're sitting down. But you're using this all on day one. What this does is it gives that new hire a much better feeling of the big picture of your restaurant, of your business. What it also does is for your trainers. Your trainers are like, man, these new hires that are coming in, they are on point. They are picking up trash whenever they are outside. They are helping at the front. They're helping in the whole kitchen almost on day one. And maybe not that extreme, but the ROI you get from painting a owner-like walk for a new hire on day one, your ROI is 10 times fold than what we usually get now.
Yeah, I can guarantee you probably have a number somewhere of how often that happens, what you just talked about. It's unfortunately really low. The ownership mentality instilling into your team is priceless, and you know that already. But having people think beyond their role, think beyond their job to understand and appreciate the full piece of it really, really drives home results in the long term. And you already hinted at the secret there. So that big picture, I love it. Take the owner mentality, go outside, walk the curb, show everything that matters. You ever sit there and then the darn ledge is all dusty. You know, this seat's broken. That light's off. Like if you have 50 sets of eyeballs looking for those things in your restaurant, because you instill that, you're going to be better off than having your general manager. He's the only one that cares. So it can't be that way. I want to go to your quote section again. This one's from Sarah Wetzel and hits your point really home, and maybe you can layer on. She says, "I truly believe that onboarding is an art. Each new employee brings with them potential to achieve and succeed. To lose the energy of a new hire through poor onboarding is an opportunity lost." Big opportunity to lose there. Anything to layer on?
Yes, that Sarah Wetzel quote was a quote that I found online that has been used. And I'm like, this is so spot on, because we tend to lose even the happiness and joy of a new job. How many times do we get a new job? We're like, yes, we got it. It's kind of like asking someone, will you marry me? And then they say yes. And then you're like silent for the next 4 hours. How awkward would that be? You know, there should be, after, you know, saying, yes, I will come on board, there should be some ongoing talking, texting, emailing, some swag bags, something helping them to get acclimated to their first day. How many times does it suck whenever you come into a new job and you have to remember everyone's name and face, and it takes you like a week. What if we took pictures of the, you know, six people that they will be working with and put just their first name and sent that to them before they even got in the restaurant? What if we sent them a list of dang acronyms? What if we sent them a mini swag bag? Just the things to help reconfirm saying yes to this marriage was the right thing versus riding home for 4 hours after saying yes in silence.
Yeah. And nothing that you just mentioned is very difficult, by the way. Right? No. All that is very, very, very achievable. So let's push on into area three. Delegate by creating mini GMs, and that kind of builds on the process. So if you can't do it all, you need more hands, and you need more eyes, and you need more people invested. What do you got?
The main key in that key, the main takeaway is that whenever you delegate, it's not just passing off the things that you don't like. Whenever you delegate, it is a form of training of understanding who are the key players within your business that is within your ranks, knowing what their role is to the KPIs that you have under you, looking at your daily and weekly task, listing it under priorities for 1, 2, or 3, and then admin level of 1, 2, or 3. And what I mean by admin level is admin one is only a GM can do it, or only you can do it. A admin two level is that maybe it's any manager, any person with keys. A admin three level is any key employee. And looking at and then listing everything you do on a weekly basis or monthly, and then saying, one, that they're all important, but a priority level one is it has to be done. And if it isn't done, it is a detriment to the customer. Two, it has to be done. If it isn't done, then it's going to be a bad experience, but it's not like the lights are going to go off. And then three, it has to be done, but it can be done last. If you notice all three things, they have to be done. That's why they're on your list. But you're figuring out, what is it that I really have to do? What needs to be done first? And then once you make this list, choosing 1, 2, 3 people that's on your team by their strengths and also what they do within your restaurant, and then saying, I'm going to have them do this. But it's not just, again, things that you don't like. It's things that make sense for how they help within your role. Looking at those KPIs and then training them the right way. There's too many times that we say, oh, okay, watch me do the truck order. Here's a truck order. I'm going to show you once. All right, good job. And then the minute they mess up, like, see, I told you, you suck. I knew it. I've always done my truck order perfectly, and that's why I'm never giving you anything. Versus training them the right way of, hey, In the next 3 weeks, we are going to start teaching you the truck order. It's a 4-week training process. In the next 2-3 weeks, figure out any questions you can ask me. But on this date is when we start. When we start, you will then watch me. I will then ask you some questions, show you all of the information. Then you're going to do it while I supervise you. And then I will be following up. But it's a 4-point technique of making sure that over a 4-week time frame that you're teaching them the right way and still following up. But that's just one of the more important steps within the delegating by creating mini GMs, not just passing off tasks, but making a true checklist of what's important, what's least important, and then how to pass that off.
Have you found in your travels that some folks just couldn't let go of, you know, their ego and the importance of a role? They just couldn't let it go. And then there's some folks that just were really good delegators. They kept them here and they were able to pass it off, and they did it successfully. And I'm not asking you to name names or anything, but any tips you can see from the more so on that second group, how folks did it really well, what personalities they use, what techniques they use for psychologically. I mean, it's a tough thing to let go inside control.
Well, we still have to cover some of the first group to figure out that second group, because the first group, there's typically three reasons why they don't delegate well. One of the first reasons are that they don't understand the information. They don't know how to teach it. They don't know that X and Y makes Z. And when they don't really understand it, it's hard for them to actually teach it. Second reason is that they actually have trust issues. And that is a real thing within any industry. And then the third one is the worst. And that is, some people think that there's power in holding back information. And that is the worst type there. Now, the second group, typically, they find that they know that they're not overbearing on their team. They know that when they hire people to work for them, that they're not going to work for them all their life. Those days are gone, whether they're with you for 1 week or 10 years. The thing is, though, what are we teaching them that when they go on to be a teacher, a rocket scientist, to run their own shop, whatever, what is it from the business side of what we're doing that we're helping them be better at? Those from that second group that come to understand that aspect of, I have to get them ready for whatever they want to do in the future, they find delegating that much more easy.
That's interesting. It is those people that won't let go and want to hide and protect. That's not the leader that you want to have above you on your journey. So let's go. This one I really, really like, because this is also done poorly in a lot of settings. Engaging with one-on-one reviews and people and bringing them up and so forth. It certainly shouldn't be done only once a year. Check-ins. Obviously, there's usually a formal process, right? But I'm talking about, like, let's check in with our people, both formally, informally. But you're going to layer on a lot better than I can in that little thought process. What do you got?
For engaging with one-on-ones, that is the most controversial one, because we think that our team knows exactly what's going on. I chat with my team all the time. I got them on a group text chat. I can text them. They know exactly what's going on. I can forward them all the emails from my boss so they know what's coming down the pipe. But really, all we're doing is that we have time to dump things on our team. A one-on-one is actually a key to coaching, which we'll get into that with the next key, which is managing versus leading versus coaching. The one-on-one, you are mastering the art of building that relationship for people to make the right choices at the right times when you're not in the building. A lot of that is going to come from questions from your team, not from data dumping. One of the keys to a great one-on-one is that you have to talk for 35% and listen for 65%. That's why we have one mouth and 2 ears. But you are doing more listening than talking. Frame it in 30 minutes. Have it for the first 10 minutes. They can talk to you about anything. They can talk to you about the game last night, the Super Bowl. They can talk to you about anything that is on their plate, whether it comes family or even work. The next 10 minutes is for you to follow up on the things that they talked about from the last one-on-one. Any questions that they asked during that time frame, that 10 minutes is for you to say, I heard your questions, I did the research, and here's the answer. The final 10 minutes, and make sure yours sticks at 10 minutes. The final 10 minutes is for them to talk about their development and things that they have some challenges on, things that they want to work on for work, or any additional questions. When you do that, you are truly building a real relationship with your team that when you're not in the building, they can actually help take care of some of them fires for you versus what you're doing.
I'm sorry, I was jotting down because I love the framework that you just had. If someone, that's probably going to slice that out as a piece by itself, because That framework of a meeting is really, really, really good. And you mentioned the Super Bowl, and I don't know when this will come out. It'll come out pretty soon before your book, but the Super Bowl was last night. So we'll date ourselves. I know I watched it. We talked about it right before going live in our recording. So that big game happens, and hopefully that was a good day for a lot of restaurants and bars out there. It's a pretty good game, went to overtime. So that's always exciting for the fans. And whether you rooted for this one or the other, it ended up being a good game. And so forth. So let me ask you a question. That interaction and the format that you gave was really, really good. The listening piece, I'm sure from history, maybe doesn't work out so much. People want to, the manager wants to tell for that mm-hmm. for that session. So give another little hit on the head to managers to do that listening piece. How could you convey that with even some more?
Well, even one of the best ways is to have a one-on-one template, something that's written in front of you is one of the best pieces. Because one of the other tips for having a solid one-on-one is no devices during the one-on-one. Okay. And some people say, oh, well, I use my notes on my phone to actually type it in there. No, because it makes someone feel like you might be mashing out a text for a spouse, for a friend, or for work, or an email. Yeah. Make it authentic. Use a handwritten form that makes them feel a lot more comfortable. And we all have things that's on our mind. We have bills, spouse, work, personal things, doctor. Using a template makes you look at it and say, this is what I'm focused on next. This is what I need to be doing during this one-on-one. Most people don't want use forms. They don't want to use checklists or anything because they want to show how well that their memory is. In the restaurant business, our memory is shot. We can't remember a dang thing. There's too much things that are going on. So yeah.
Yeah. No, good. Thanks for those two tips there. Help bring it home. The templates, no devices. Listen, it's getting bad. We're all doing this. We're sitting at our dinner table and five of us, there's, in the house, we're all looking at our phone. Come on. We got to put them down. Sometimes you got to get away.
I shake my head because I do it too. Yes.
Yeah. We're all addicted. We're addicted. It's happening. All right. Let's do one more. And we're talking so much. I'm going to bring you back in the future. We'll do the second half of the book. We'll talk some more. I have leading with the right mindset is the next one. Okay? Yes. So let's do that, and then we'll kind of go towards wrapping. So leading with the right mindset. What do you got?
Okay. Now, what you may not realize is what you just did. You just went through what I call the model. The model is an acronym: master your KPIs, owner-like orientation, delegate, engage, and lead. That is the 5-step repeatable model that managers can use to help run their businesses more effectively. So the L, leading with the right mindset. Leading with the right mindset is that we have 3 interchangeable mindsets that we can use to help be better at everything we do, from training to engagement, to even developing our teams. Managing versus leading versus coaching. And it's not a one versus the other. It's knowing which is the right approach in the right situation to reach the best outcome. Now, some may say, well, if you manage or you lead or you coach, you can get a good outcome. But you don't want a good outcome. You want the best. Managing is the art of taking a group of people to make sure that they stay within the guardrails to hit a certain point by a certain time within a certain budget. We use managing more than anything else throughout our day within this industry. And managing isn't bad. It's not an evil tool. It's something that we have to rely on to help stay within budgets. But then there's also the leadership, the leading mindset. The leading mindset is whenever those fires come and a group of people can't find out what is the next step to do. It's helping to paint that picture of where to go next in order to reach the runway, to get to that vacation spot, even before the plane is built or while it's being built, and they're still hopping on, just because you've painted a picture that's so clear, so vivid, that they choose to jump on that plane even while it's being built. Coaching is different. Coaching is the mastery of one-on-ones or small group feedback. Coaching is literally taking someone, knowing what their strengths are, and you find that out through the one-on-ones, finding out what their goals are, and then you're training them in order to get to the place that they need to go. And that's that one-on-one relationship building that helps you and your crew get to the places that they didn't think that they could. Now, each of those mindsets have different tactics. So they have different styles, whether it's holistic or democratic or autocratic or authoritative. There are different types of styles that you can use within each mindset to help you get better at what you do. In the book, it does list some goods and some cautions for every style within that mindset, so you can understand what you want the best outcome to be.
I was just, again, I'm taking tons of notes here, so I appreciate you. Also looking at one of the quotes from this section of your book that just, boom, we'll circle and bring everything you just talked home. Coley O'Brien, related to the chief people officer at Wendy's, says, in simplest terms, managing equals doing, leading equals inspiring, and coaching equals helping. To be a highly effective leader or team member, I think you have to be skilled and willing to do all three at different times. So, and knowing which one is that's the art of it. You know, knowing when you have to, sometimes you got to tell people to do something. And sometimes you got to, you know, build that vision. I wrote down how you did it. You know, when you're painting that picture of a plane, jumping on the plane, it's not even built like that. How do you bring people along? You have to, it's charisma, it's vision, it's a way of being, and not everybody has that tactic. And that one's really, really important. But then coaching people individually and understanding them, all those things are really, really, really important. Jason, talk about you speak, you talk, you consult, what else is going on in your world?
You know, my main focus right now is this book, and I'll tell you why. My main focus right now is this book because this book has put me on a mission, mm-hmm. and I'm on a mission to give $30,000 in 30 days to Giving Kitchen. Now, Giving Kitchen mm-hmm. is a phenomenal nonprofit. Many people in this industry has heard of them because they've helped so much. Started out in Atlanta. I believe they turned nonprofit in 2013. They've given almost $8 million back to food service workers in need. And I want to give them $30,000 in 30 days. That's $1,000 for every day this industry has given me. Mm-hmm. And we can mm-hmm. do that mm-hmm. by putting 10,000 books into the hands of food service workers. Giving Kitchen helps food service workers in need. I help food service workers transform into hospitality leaders. So my goal is to get 10,000 books into the hands of food service workers. It does two things. It gives back to a great nonprofit, and it also helps to give a good training tool to managers that need it, especially these days.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Talk about, so is that the release of it? How are you spreading the word? How can we help? Is it the website? Is it sharing more content? What else?
Sharing more content. It is the website. It's right now. It is on Amazon. The official launch is March 18th, but every book sold from March 18th to April 18th, including all pre-orders, mm-hmm. puts it towards hitting that goal of $30,000 back to Giving Kitchen. There's going to be a pretty big marketing push starting March 1st. I didn't want to start too early, but that's what's going to help give back. And if this goes well, I want to do this every single year, month of March, to help give back to Giving Kitchen.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. So I have jasonebrooks.com as your main website. Is that you on social as well? Other websites, other place to find you?
I am on social at To Lead and Succeed. And that is on Twitter or X, the number 2 Lead and Succeed. That's also on Instagram, To Lead and Succeed. JasonEbrooks.com is the best website. And the book is on JasonEbrooks.com/Every Leader. And it's also on Amazon. You can search for Every Leader Needs Followers, Jason Brooks, it'll pop up right there. So yes.
Yeah, perfect. And listen, I did not read every page of the book yet, but I can tell you from what I've read, like this is one of those easy no-brainers. Like you got to get a copy. You've got to go through this. It is excellent. If you just hearing Jason talk for it, you spent 30 plus minutes with us. If you're like, hey, I don't need to know more. I don't know what you're thinking, because this was really good stuff. So I appreciate you, Jason.
Thank you, Jamie.
Folks, Jason Brooks of Hospivation. Find him on the web at jasonebrooks.com for more great restaurant marketing and service and people tech tips as well. Stay tuned to us here at runningrestaurants.com. If you could do us a big favor and hit that like button or subscribe wherever you listen, give us a review. We would appreciate those things. Thanks, folks. We will see you next time. Appreciate it.